You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Comedy Cellar Show here on Sirius XM Channel 99. We're here without Natterman. Natterman's late, and honestly, I'm nervous to do it without Dan. I really depend on Dan. But I'll tell you who our guests, and we're not in the comp, we're upstairs in the studio where Norton and Robert Kelly do their podcasts. We're not at the Comedy Cellar because they're shooting Crashing.
I was looking forward to being in that, you know? That fucking madness I always see you guys do every week. I'm like, can't wait to be in there.
We should have done that, right?
Yeah.
We should have done with the sound and everything.
Yeah, just...
While they're filming.
Just told HBO to move over.
Yeah. And Judd was there. Judd probably would have said, shit.
Yeah, he would have sat in.
So let me introduce everybody. So, Dean Del Rey is a New York City-based stand-up comedian and host of the podcast Let There Be Talk.
Yes.
And... Paul Verzi is a New York City-based... This guy is... I think he's right and he's just to piss me off. Is this New York City-based stand-up comedian host of the podcast The Verzi Effect?
Yes, sir.
And Tim Doner is a good friend of mine. And is a recent graduate of Harvard.
Oh.
And speaks over 20 languages. He's one of the world's few famous polyglots.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
wow,
I saw the video. It was nuts.
It's amazing. He can speak Chinese. He speaks the Xhosa language.
No.
Yes, he does.
Allegedly.
Can you say a little Xhosa just for in the mic, please? Is this your first? Harvard, they didn't teach you about mic school.
Huh? Yeah, yeah. Get up on the mic.
It's not much I remember from that, but no, the word for doctor is ambile. Word for church is Allah.
Wow.
Can't remember else. There's another
what's the word
one.
For white man?
That one, I don't know. Mzungu, probably.
You're not allowed to say that one. Anyway. and Alvin Kawhi?
Yeah, that's right.
Is a New York City... is a New York City-based stand-up comic. Now, are you here... He's Asian. But, are you Japanese? What are you?
I'm Chinese.
Chinese.
And I was actually embarrassed by that video because he probably speaks better Chinese
that's
than I.
Chinese. Definitely not true.
So are you here because you're a comedian or are you here because of this Harvard Asian thing?
I don't know. I just, Stephen was like,
oh, Stephen
was like, do you want to do a podcast at the Cellar? And I'm just like, yes. So I have no idea.
No, that's not why. I don't think that's why you're on. But I asked Stephen to, because I'm into this thing, and I asked Stephen to find an Asian expert to discuss the fact that they won't let them into Harvard. And then I'm just wondering, are you aware of that issue?
Yeah, I've read about it in the news. You know, I'm also Asian. I've been Asian, for a long time.
You guys know about this issue?
Yeah, I've been
New York Times.
Yeah,
yes.
Tim, can you give us a little overview of the Asian?
No, I think you've been harping on this for about 3 weeks.
No, but you know a lot of the details.
Do I?
Okay. There's a lawsuit against Harvard that in the lawsuit and discovery process they have to finally reveal their admissions procedures.
Right.
And in that, it's come out that Asians score the highest on GPA, the highest on test scores, and the highest in extracurriculars,
right,
and even score well in the interviews. And then somehow mysteriously at the end...
When they're scored by a committee that doesn't actually meet them, they're always marked off for characteristics that, you know...
Bad personality.
No, basically, right.
Yeah, that was it. Bad personality.
And consequently... Even though the population of Asians has doubled over the last, 15 years or something in this country, their numbers at Harvard have stayed mysteriously almost exactly the same.
Right.
But they're not discriminating against Asians. Now, if I were, if this was against Jews, we would not tolerate this.
Right.
But for some reason...
Well, this was against Jews about 100 years ago with the same characteristics,
they busted them on
right?
that a million years ago. This is the second time they've gone through this race thing.
Right, there's this 800-page book called The Chosen, which is a history of Ivy League admissions, and they talk all about this stuff, how people kept out Jews by saying, oh, well, it's good that you're smart, but we also want people who are, kind-hearted or courageous. So they have these fake categories that
generous
the book of Jews
for the dollar.
Didn't mix. No, exactly, right.
And they figured out how to reword it to where it was more like we want to have multicultural is what they were, the legal way of, being able to push some people out.
So 100 years ago, we didn't stand for it. And 100 years ago, racial discrimination was not quite frowned upon or as it is today. I mean, this is during Jim Crow, whatever. It's like, we didn't really have much of a leg to stand on.
Yeah.
But now, the idea of keeping someone out based on, their DNA, to me, ought to be outrageous. Yet, you don't really meet that many Asians up in arms about it. What do you say?
I mean, I think part of it was I think historically Asians haven't really spoken a lot about like how they've been oppressed, and I think a lot of it was because I think Asians as a minority are like pretty new to this country, so a lot of first generation or like the you know generation that like first moved here, they don't like speak the language that well. So in terms of like creating more awareness, like there was that huge language barrier, and I think that was like a huge thing before.
I don't think that's the reason at all.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think they are. This is going to sound racist. I think they're just culturally, they're ready to just take it. Next. They just shut up and take it. That's what it seems like to me.
Well, I don't think that's the case because I think with a lot of like first generation Asians that you know the Asians that grew up in this country. I mean, you see action that's taking place now with this Harvard thing. And I think like more and more with, you know, there's also the article about like that writer who was in New York Times who also spoke
Sarah
about.
Yeah, Sarah Jung.
Exactly. Who spoke up. So a lot of people I know and like I grew up with in the Asian community are speaking out.
Oh, you're talking about the other one who wrote a column in the Times complaining about it.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the language thing, I mean, I just know from, you know, my personal experience growing up with like you know, my parents and like a lot of their friends, I know like the language barrier was a huge thing for them.
Did you grow up in the city?
In New York? No, I grew up in, I grew up around DC. DC.
Well, what do you think, Tim? You're not in Harvard anymore. Can you speak freely?
Yeah, it gets pretty
he seems nervous.
There. No, what do you want me to say?
Does it outrage you?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of things outrage me. I think this is pretty bad.
Like to me, that's the thing. Nobody seems to quite be reacting to it like what it is.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think part of the issue is like, you know, no one there is aware of it, right? I actually didn't know that much about this until this article came out. Like,
I didn't
about
know
a month
any,
ago.
Anything
to
either.
Be completely
even
honest.
Still, somehow people don't seem to be able to internalize it. Like they're taking people, and by the way, my theory is that if Asians actually looked like white people. Even if their scores were better and everything, they still wouldn't keep them out. It somehow is a vestige of the fact that they look different. I as a matter of human nature, I believe that, but I can't prove that. But the idea that that somebody in this day and age mm-hmm. is being kept saying, "Well, you got a 95," but wait a second, hold on there. Let's see your DNA. Oh, it says here you're descendant of China. Yeah. Well, actually, you got a 78.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty bizarre.
This is America.
Yeah, like especially like on schools that pride themselves on top students. You know what I mean? Like you want to have the best students coming out of Harvard that go on to do stuff. And they're like, look at our students. They were amazing. You know, doesn't matter what they are, you know.
And by the way, when they did it to Jews, they would try to rationalize it. Now they're saying, this is the right thing we're doing. We represent the righteous. Mm-hmm. We're keeping Asians out because it's good and right, and we're doing a good thing. And then, of course, and I'll shut up about this talk. I can't also help see it in the bigger context of immigration, where Trump is, you know, trying to limit, trying to get us to look at where we're taking immigrants from, and he wants that to be part of the equation. Is that? And people say it's outrageous. You have no business looking at people where they're from, any immigrant, blah, blah, blah. But once they're here, then it's extremely important where they came from because we don't know how to judge them when they apply to school now. The left, I know you guys are probably liberals, the left is just, they make it up as they go along. They're uh-huh. making it up as they go along. And I'm sure the right, you can find examples of it's human nature. But on this issue, they are making it up as they go along. And it's all kind of coming apart a little bit now with this Sarah Jung, who I actually support. This New York Times.
Well, that's interesting.
The hiring.
Why is that?
Yeah, you support the hiring.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's an interesting thing because, you know, here's somebody, and that goes back to any of us sitting in here as far as any kind of comedian or anything that where you're going to get a job all of a sudden that they can take away. You can say anything you want on Twitter until you have something they can take away. So these comments, which was more like death to all white old men, you know, was I think one of them or whatever. You know, when you read that, you know, you don't look at that like, oh, yeah, she means that or what. You know how tweets are. They're hard to.
Well, that's the thing, though. It's context.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's context. Like if you read it and it's clearly a joke, then you're like, oh, this person's joke. But if you read it and you get a sense like this individual doesn't like white men.
Oh, she wasn't joking.
Right. Yeah. And here's the other thing. If she's not joking, I mean, flip it. If somebody else got hired at the New York Times okay? If a white man got hired at the New York Times and said something about...
Said the stuff that you say.
A different race. Said the stuff. Any other race and you're gone.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, I got the Italian face, so you guys are like, God knows what's said at his Thanksgiving table.
Right.
But no, I think if the tables were turned, I don't think that she would have been hired. I mean, that person would be hired.
I don't think it matters at all until you have something they can take away. Nobody cares what you say until you get some kind of good gig.
That's true, because when Trevor Noah got the Daily Show gig at Comedy Central,
you mean the Trevor Noah who hates the Aborigine? That Trevor Noah?
I guess, yes. Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? You could sit here and spew off tons of stuff on Twitter all day. They might block you for a couple weeks. But the second you get something they can take away, then it means something, which is crazy because no one's up in arms on any... There's so much garbage on this Twitter and no one says anything like, look at this asshole.
So let me put on my Essence of Truth hat.
Yeah.
And tell you what I think about this, and I'm curious. So a lot of people on the right are just rejecting this whole notion that when they make fun of somebody white, that it's any different than making fun of somebody black, somebody Jewish. I think that's right. I think it is different. We don't, as white people, react to it with the same hurt.
Right.
Right.
And we don't even interpret it with the same hurt. It is somehow shorthand for the establishment or whatever it is. So I have to be honest about that. On the other hand, I do believe that non-white people can be racist. And I believe that what she's doing is still indefensible because she is still buying into the notion that it's okay to generalize in a gross way about different types of people, where you certainly are not allowed to generalize about black people or whatever it is.
Not at all, right?
Even if it's not for racist reasons, you're barely allowed to say that they're better athletes. You know, you are not allowed to make those. So she's allowing herself the luxury of being able to think in a way which is improper. It is improper for her to say that, and it's not because she hates white people. I'm sure she has white friends and you know would be perfectly nice to us, but it's wrong to think that way. That's what bothers me. Now, why do I think she should not be fired? Because I don't think anybody should be fired.
Right.
I want to read her in the Times. I mean, when I was a kid, we had an anti-Semitic comment, anti-Semitic columnist. His name was Pat Buchanan, and he's still around. And we all knew he was kind of anti-Semitic. As a matter of fact, the National Review wrote a whole like 50-page article one time by William Buckley, the conclusion being that Pat Buchanan is an anti-Semite. Yet there was no big movement that he had to, you know, that they had to drop his columns.
Right.
And that's the way I feel about it. Like, I'm glad. And finally, I like that. I mean, it's going to be very, very hard. After this Joy Reid ridiculousness and this Sarah Jeong, it's going to be very hard for anybody to really complain about anybody's tweets, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they're really dismantling themselves from the inside the way logic on the right could never dismantle. So those are the reasons. That's what I feel about it.
You know what's interesting about the Sarah Jeong thing is, like, one of the biggest like Fox News was a huge thing.
Oh, I love Fox News. Yeah.
You know, did you see the segment that Jesse Waters did on like when he went to like Chinatown and he was like talking to like old people who like old Chinese people who couldn't speak English. And he just said a bunch of racist stuff to their face, like, "Oh, you guys like to eat dogs?" Is that what it wasn't
Jesse
that bad.
Waters said that?
No, it wasn't that bad. It was more like hacky Asian jokes. I don't
You guys
remember.
Like to do math?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like shit like that.
I bet you're
like
a bad driver.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So like, and that, I mean, that's not as bad as what Sarah, like it's not as extreme as what Sarah Jeong said, saying like white people should live underground or some shit.
Yeah,
like
he said
that,
the goblins.
Yeah.
That's kind of funny. But yeah.
I don't know, it's
ridiculous if Fox News is complaining like, oh, like, you know, all of a sudden, like, you can't say what you want. They were just defending, like, that jokey segment that they were
doing. I mean, I'm glad they do. Like, I think all of that stuff should be okay.
I do, too.
And there is something that bothers me about this woman, that she came over here, she's first generation, right? Her parents, was she actually born in Korea? Is she Korean?
I'm not sure.
I think she's born or she just came over. Her parents just came over. And in the very short span of time, she's graduated from Harvard Law School. She's 30 years old, I think.
She got in.
And now she's on the editorial board of the New York Times.
Yeah. Right.
And I would like to think that somebody, a fresh immigrant, who sees that kind of achievement achievable would have a little more affection for this country, would have a little bit more perspective on things that, I mean, she just fits right into this America sucks, America's racist, blah, 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 as if she didn't just become on the, like what,
she
what
won the lottery.
What a, no, well, she probably earned it. What a story. Could I go to Korea and wind up on the, I mean, you, Tim might speak one of those languages. You think they're going to put you on the editorial board of some Korean news? They're not gonna.
Okay.
They're not going to. And
yeah, well, hold on. If we're going to... Okay, if you take the example, okay, let's say like the United States in the 1930s or 1940s, right, when Jews were still being systematically excluded from universities the way that they are today, right? As any like Jew first generation, let's say from Brooklyn with Litvak parents who didn't get accepted to Harvard on the sake of having the last name Greenbaum or whatever, you could say the same thing. You know, well, it's you're just not trying too hard because look in government, there's Felix Frankfurter, there's Samuel Weiss, there's whoever else. There were Jews who had made it through, but the fact that there were people in high positions of power, people who were able to use their advantages and their opportunities to them to achieve a high status in America, that should not take away from the fact that like there still is some level of systematic.
No, this, you should call the world. But listen,
right.
But I think what I'm going to say you're going to agree with. It was totally, if it even ever existed, Jews in that generation, whatever they thought about what was wrong with America, they never felt that way about America. I mean, I was just telling somebody, like my father came in 1939. I have his diary somewhere when he was 10 years old or 11 years old.
Wow.
And the front page is, and he was just learning to speak English, right? Front page is questions for kids. What's your hero? Who's your hero? Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Something like that. Abraham Lincoln. I mean, he had immersed himself as like, I'm a fucking American as a little boy. And then, of course, World War II happened. So America was at a high watermark of being like indisputable on the moral side,
right,
and the hero of the world.
Besides not bombing the concentration camps or rejecting Jewish refugees.
Nobody knew that stuff at the time.
We kind of did, but the point instead was that mass society was not necessarily invested in that because there were like three media outlets at the time. There was the New York Times and like two radio stations.
All right. But I'm just saying the typical immigrant attitude of that time,
pro America.
Unbelievably probably. Like I saw a document, Yasha Heifetz, the famous Jewish man, would go out on his lawn every day and raise an American flag.
Absolutely.
You know? And that is not, and I've always been worried about this. Like now immigrants, aside from coming now from countries that kind of grow up thinking America was a colonialist power, and they may be right, you know, and took their land in Mexico and whatever, is like, you know, they have all these ideas. They also still have one foot in one country and one foot in the other country. You know, like there wasn't even long distance phone calls on my father's. Like,
no, can I ask instead, what if your definition or your understanding of patriotism is instead outdated, that it can change and adapt over the course of 50 years.
I have an answer for everything.
Yeah.
No, but
I mean, maybe you can be patriotic without having to put up a flag unquestioningly in your backyard.
You just answered it.
Okay, tell me.
Maybe. What we are going to test now in the next 30 years of America is whether this mixed salad analogy will work like the melting pot worked. I think I'm not saying we're gonna have a civil war, but I think it's not likely to work as well as the melting pot worked. And the reason I say to look out at the rest of the world where they have mixed salads, and it's just violence.
It's not working now.
I mean, and even in Canada, we said where the French are always talking about seceding from the English. There's a human urge to want to be around people you're comfortable with and the same, and assimilation is really helps that. I saw an article that 40% of the houses in Florida speak Spanish as a first language. I mean, you know, this is not a formula for a great social fabric. I have no problem with it. You know, this is not like I'm like some jingoistic. I don't care. I live in Manhattan. Like, this is not going to affect me. But to be realistic, we're just blindly, like, I think they should probably slow immigration down, give everybody a chance to breathe, maybe have national service. Get people together, let more inbreeding happen. I don't know. I think this is a big risk.
Well, here's the question I have for you there, right? So your take on it essentially is that multicultural societies can't work because in this current period we're seeing there is all this strife.
No, they can work, but they have to have the proper attitude about it. They can't work if they're villainized. Each culture is looking at each other as a zero-sum game of taking resources and taking power and whatever it is and blaming people for their genetics and what their forefathers did. And it's nuts. Go ahead.
Okay, but the question I have then is this something that's essentially like predetermined in a sense, or is it, could it be the case that we are at the low end of a trough and we're going back up? Like, maybe we're in a rough period, right?
Yeah.
Like, maybe it doesn't make sense to talk so kind of end of days about it, that we're at the very, you know, the high end of liberalism and it's just all downhill from here.
No, I agree with everything you just, I hope I didn't sound like end of days. I'm pessimistic about it because no one's been able to demonstrate or give me any argument based on anything that's happened in the world anywhere. And historically, I would say, well, no, don't worry about it because that's the way they felt here and look how it turned out there. But, you know, I hope it works out. But I don't see why we have to just put the foot on the accelerator now for immigration and all this stuff, really, at this point, just to prove a point. Like, let's just, you know, just hold up.
Well, here's how I think of it is, like, I always think of, like, kind of a... like social movements and like the like kind of like the social atmosphere of America, like a spectrum.
Yeah.
And I think like we're just swinging to the other side of the spectrum. Like, I think the reaction is probably extreme, but I think it's important to, like, you know, for people to point out like all the inequalities and there's all this finger pointing, because before it was like,
you mean
those
inequalities
problems
like Asians can't get into Harvard, those kind of inequalities.
Yeah, exactly. It's what? Like before it was like all that stuff was hidden, and now we're going into a direction where, you know, maybe it's like, you know, too extreme to the other side, but the pendulum always swings back. So
you know,
I think
you know what
make
me
good.
Optimistic?
It'll equal out later.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's what always happens.
I'd be optimistic if Harvard were 50 or 60% or whatever would be the natural number, 45% Asian, and I went to somebody and said, you know that Harvard's 45% Asian? And they said, so what? What are you talking about? They're Americans.
Yeah.
Then I'd be optimistic. Like, we're able to see each other as Americans. We're not able to see, we're encouraged not to see each other as Americans. So how can it work?
You know what?
How can it work?
That is true right there. Yeah. I mean, why would they even, why would they even be talking about Asian at all? It's just,
should
come down to grades.
I would be so proud of my country.
Right.
If Harvard were 45% Asian, and I'd be like, oh, that's America.
Yeah, well, that's who earned it. You know,
that's right.
That's who earned it.
An interesting point that
you brought up. Not my lineup at the Comedy Cellar, by the way, but go ahead.
An interesting point. No. I disagree with that. I disagree with that. I think you brought up a really interesting point where you said, like, the left is just kind of making it up as they go along. Dude, the left, like, and so many hipsters I know, and, like, I do a lot of, like, the Brooklyn rooms, right? They don't give a fuck about Asians. They don't give a fuck about, they'll do all social justice jokes about racism is bad, you know, white people suck, but those fucking, like, Asians can't drive, right? And then everyone will, like, die laughing.
That's just a shitty comic.
But it's like, but it'll kill in the room.
But you know what?
Yeah, but that's also... a dumb crowd who thinks they're smart.
Working the cellar. He's working. I'm kidding.
But no, but what I'm saying is, you know, those kind of jokes are like when a joke like that hits in a room, I go, this room sucks.
Yeah.
You know, right away, because you're probably not going to do good. Because
that level of comedy is just lower.
You just, I don't even have this shit. This is from the 70s. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But
I mean, if you turn on any YouTube old 70s clip, you're going to see, hey, how about those Asian drivers, huh? Oh, I can't drive. And you're like, that's fucking the 70s, dude. And we're in 2000. It's funny because
Jessica Kirsten, I mean, I don't want to speak out of turn because, you know, she's highly respected and it kills. But she does a whole full-on Asian making fun of the nail salon bit, complete with the accent and everything. And it kills.
Yeah,
I'm actually always a little uncomfortable about it.
No, you said something that really was perfect before when you said that it's when like the far. That's why I'm a registered independent, because I just when I see both sides. But now it's gone so far both ways that they're trying to get each other. Everyone's trying to be right, and everybody. It's so much where it's like people that said, give equality and don't be racist and don't discriminate, that those groups of people are doing something like saying, you know, white men or whatever. Now, I'm not saying that white dudes and white people didn't have it easier in this country. The numbers say
and
that
still
they
have
did.
It easier.
But
Asians are the highest performing.
But there's a group of white people who did, like myself included. I didn't grow up. I grew up. It was tough what I had. I grew up tough. And I grew up in a single, you know, after my parents got divorced, me and my brother, we lived in a single bedroom apartment with my mom. My mom slept on the
floor.
Cue
the music,
but I'm just saying, like, so, but I'll be looked at in a comedy club or somewhere in these times as, oh, that's, you know, it's like, you don't know. You are doing to me what ultimately you don't want done to you. So
that's
I think, and that's exactly what you said before. Again, I'm not saying that people didn't, certain groups didn't have things easy. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying to generalize and point to somebody and say, well, this is the way I think of you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, white dude should be killed. It's like, this is, well, you don't, let's go on an individual basis the way everybody wants it.
Right. Everyone has a cookie cutter.
It's come
identity.
Down to
what's that?
Everyone has like a cookie cutter identity that they're placed into, basically.
Yeah.
Yes. Everybody's like, yeah, into a group.
And you just, yeah. Right.
I was definitely on food stamps, ate government cheese.
Really?
Oh, fuck yeah.
At what age?
All the way up until I was about 14, 15, free lunches at school. Because, you know, my mom was a single mom with one job and, you know, no money.
So how do you feel about when people say white privilege?
Well, you know, this is a good point, and this is when I, even though I grew up poor, I was telling Verzi this yesterday. I went through TSA a couple days ago by accident with a switchblade knife. I was moving some stuff here, and I grabbed
felony. Felony
in California. I grabbed this old bag in my room and just filled it with clothes because I'm going to New York. It was an old bag, and I get to TSA, and you know, and I'm going through, and the guy goes, "Looks like you got a knife here." And I go, "I don't have a knife. I never have a knife." You know what I mean? He goes, "Yeah, you don't look like it." This is exactly what he said. First of all, you see how I look. He goes, "You don't look like a knife holder."
Wow.
And I go, "Really? Fuck you. I've been working on looking like a knife holder."
A good liberal would have been offended that he's profiling you.
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? Like, you know. So anyway, he goes through, he finds this switchblade. And I'm like, "Oh, fuck. That was in there. I've had it since the seventh grade. Some guy went to Mexico, bought a switchblades." And he goes, I go, "Fuck, I'm done here. I am done here. I need to get through TSA. You know, if this goes down, I can't even get into Canada and shit, where I work a lot." And he goes, "Yeah, gonna have to take this." And I go, "Oh yeah, absolutely." And I just boogied on. And that's when I realized, oh fuck, man, right there, you know, lucky man right there. You know what I mean?
Maybe yes, but well, maybe, I mean, if you've been Muslim, they would have taken a much closer look.
Anything.
At you. I'm not sure in that situation. First of all, most of these guys are black at TSA.
Right, yep. But
so
still.
So it was probably a black guy who let you through.
It was. Yeah. But still, though, man, I mean, a
good call, right?
That was a good call.
A white dude with a switchblade? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Tattoos everywhere.
Tattoos? Fucking. I mean, not even a, "Hey, let's come over here for a minute and talk to you." Second fucking check.
I think not even a wand. I think the general point that you're trying to make is correct, but I do want to say that I think in that job, they probably see this all the time if somebody has something stupid in their bag.
A switchblade, though. Yeah. This is a felony in California. I mean, allegedly, I had a switchblade. Allegedly.
The felony is what? To take it on board.
It's a felony to have a switchblade in California.
Oh, at all?
Now, I think what I got lucky on...
TSA doesn't care about
that. I was lucky on was it was open, so he didn't know it was a switchblade, you know what I mean? But if it would have been closed and he pressed the brass button, you know?
Well, listen, I've seen this, you know... I had a black girlfriend for like 5-6 years. We lived together. And I would see little things like she had to dress much nicer in a store than I did. I could go into like a Fifth Avenue. It didn't matter what I fucking wore. They assumed I probably had money.
Yeah.
And she said, "I got to get dressed up. I'm going to sex." Or we'd be trying to get a cab together, but the taxi driver couldn't process that we were together. So he'd pull past her and say to me, get in, thinking that we were competing for the cab. So, I mean, of course, this is real life.
In my neighborhood, everyone, I had all races. My best friend was black. My other best friend was Mexican. Yeah. So we were all poor. I had no idea that most people didn't pay for shit that looked like Monopoly money. That's what we had, these stamps. You know, you pulled them out. It was like
the food stamps.
Yeah, it looked like tickets to Disneyland, you know. But I thought that's how everybody was, for real. I didn't know it was because of we were poor. I thought that's just what it was. I knew we were poor, but I thought everybody was poor.
Dan Natterman has joined
us. Yeah, you didn't. When did you guys start?
8:00.
Well, you couldn't wait a little bit.
We can't, because there's another podcast after this.
All right. So filming in on where we're at.
White people are bad.
White trash. No, like, I've been paying for this fucker for years. Him and his family.
We're talking about the
Sarah Jeong
and white privilege. Dean grew up very poor and on food stamps.
That's great that you said white trash, though, because this is what I wanted to say. And somebody made this a point. I was at the subway and I was buying a ticket. And before I was buying a ticket, a guy came up and said, "Yo, man, let me sell you this ticket." And I said, "No, I'm good. I'm right here." And he said, "You fucking peck of wood." Had no no, it bounced off me. No fucking problem with it. I don't even know what peckerwood was. I had to go home.
That's a white slur?
Yeah, I had to go home and Google it.
I didn't even know.
I never knew it. But anyway, there's no, it has no, you know, it didn't faze me at all.
Doesn't hurt you.
Doesn't hurt me at all. You know, and even if I looked it up and saw what it meant, I was like, ah, yeah, all right. You know what I mean? It's like, so, you know, I don't really feel the stuff if somebody's like that woman saying all white men should die. I don't really feel it. You know what I'm saying?
Right, because a black man that heard the N-word in the 60s got the shit beat out of him and all
exactly.
that. And that's why the generations coming up, that word is ridiculous. You hear peckerwood, it's almost like, yeah, is that
it's almost cartoon.
It's like a
it's almost cartoon.
Peckerwood is almost, yeah, it's like a cartoonish. Yeah.
Be that as it may, it's still hatred.
Exactly.
And this is something that certainly shouldn't be something that we celebrate.
Right.
Whether it's something that we punish is another story. I don't know how what's been discussed. You know, here.
Well, that's okay. Go ahead, Dan.
You know, I mean, this woman with Sarah Jeanne.
Sarah Jeanne.
I mean, it seems to me pretty clear, although I guess it maybe she was. She said she was just joking. I mean,
that's what she said.
No, she said she was counter trolling, which is the right. Like, can I just say my little observation? Like, Trump. Okay, Don Jr. has that meeting with the Russians.
Yeah.
So they all go into a room and they come out with a story. Like, this is our line and it was about the adoption, blah, blah, blah. And everybody's outraged at the lie. The New York Times is just outraged. Then the New York Times get in trouble for Sarah Jeanne and the editorial board all goes into a room and they come out with a story, counter-trolling. Yeah. And everybody's like, oh, that's fine. But of course, no, but everybody, damage control is always a lie. It's always a spin. But counter-trolling is the dumbest thing ever because anybody looks at those tweets, she wasn't answering any specific tweet. She was just offering these things up, but go ahead.
So what is your take on it, Noam? I mean,
I love it.
But what do you mean you love it?
I like it from every angle. It's going to be interesting to read. It undermines the whole liberal argument about this stuff. It means that people, in some way, people who are get caught for their bad tweets are going to get. For instance, if this had happened first, maybe Kevin Williamson wouldn't have been fired from The Atlantic. It would have been much harder for them to fire him. In this context, I believe. I
mean, Dan, you think she should have been fired?
No, I don't think she should have. Well, it's the New York Times decision whether to fire somebody or not. I would certainly not campaign for her to be fired. I do think she's got a screw loose. It's apparent to me that she is obsessed with white people in an unhealthy way. And I don't think to say that, and many have her.
Although when a white guy's obsessed with Asian girls, it's perfectly normal, right?
Well, sexually.
All the time.
Everybody knows that guy. Everybody knows that guy.
Well, yeah.
That's why. Let's not bring fetishes into this.
Let's not bring Russman Eve into this.
Fetishes.
You know, and another excuse that was made, not that just that she was counter-trolling, but the other thing that has been said is that when progressives, when anti-racists say white people, what they mean is white people that are racist. They mean a specific class of white people.
I think they mean the establishment, the people.
Rich white people.
Or just, the, I don't know what they mean, but...
Yeah. Do you find that argument at all convincing?
Yeah, I do. I said before you came, I think there is some truth to that. I think that when she's saying that stuff about white people, it is not the same as if I would said that about black people. But it bothers me still that she permits herself that kind of vulgar generalizing. It absolutely shows a lack of class. And I don't want to get this really boring, but I was reading a little bit of Dershowitz's one of his old books, and he says something about Judaism that it says, Tim Martineau, that it says that you're supposed to do the rituals, and if you do them, the belief comes. And I think there is something to that, that when you permit yourself certain things, you fall into a certain belief thing. And I think that by surrounding yourself in people, they talk about white people, they just fall into a worldview, and they're permitting themselves a vulgar behavior that it shouldn't be. They should be able to say, listen, it's not the same thing, but you know, we just shouldn't talk that way.
I mean,
we shouldn't talk that way.
Well, I hold the New York Times pretty much. I like the New York Times a lot, and I hold it up pretty high. So for me to think that somebody that works at the New York Times would talk trashy like that was interesting to me.
Also, another thing I'm thinking about is that at some point I feel like we are getting perilously close to thought crimes, meaning that I'm not sure, are we punishing her because she tweeted it, or are we really punishing her or wanting to punish her because she thinks it? And if we want to root out people who think it, like, what if it came to light in a private email? What if it came to light that somebody saw her diary by accident? Like, right. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Like, where right. does it all end?
Like, right. There's an assumption that, like, that speech and writing have to be unified, or that the sort of the private self is the same as the public self, which is something. I don't know if you can avoid that. I think it's
inner
wrong.
Thoughts and writings. You know?
Right. But I guess the question is, like, can you avoid those sorts of assumptions, given that we live in a society where 24/7, like, your private self is on public display?
I mean, I think.
Right?
I mean,
I'm not justifying
it. Interesting. Like, what really bothers? Like, what is bothering us about her?
Well,
another reason is it because any of these tweets? Is it because they tweeted it? The behavior of the tweeting, right. Or is that? We discovered what you think.
Well, I think it's that they discovered what they think. If they could make a reasonable case that they don't really think that, then they'd be forgiven.
The guy who got fired at Netflix for using the N-word, right. He made a pretty reasonable case that he was, I mean, he was discussing sensitive words. He wasn't, you know, cared that he didn't think
I want. What would the New York Times have done if a white person, if it was reversed?
Totally fired.
Well, I already said that.
Yeah. Like, not even, it's not even close.
Not even close, no. Totally fired.
Not an investigation, no leave of absence, no. Fucking done.
No, totally fired. Yeah.
I'd like to know, what's your name, our Asian?
Alvin.
What kind of Asian are you? Let me guess.
I
was going to say Japanese, but you're Chinese?
Yeah, look Chinese. To me, in my white racist way, you look more like Japanese people I know.
I get that a lot.
Even among Asians,
you get that, right?
But impression of the Asian community,
you're good.
And having grown up with not small amount of Asians in my hometown, I always assumed that they were, couldn't be happier to be living in a white man's world. After all, you're very successful on average, not all of you. I don't think you have overwhelming discrimination headed your way that I can see. And so is what Sarah Zhang has tweeted, is this a sentiment that is more widespread in the Asian world than I would have thought?
I definitely think so, because I don't think, like, just again, from my personal experience, I don't think Asian people are, like, happy to be living in a white man's world, you know?
I think I said delighted. Did I say happy?
Delighted, sorry.
They chose to come here.
It's funny. But that doesn't mean like the society here is perfect, you know. Like, but it's
perfect.
Better than like being in the Cultural Revolution back in China.
What I'm saying, that's right. Even Koreans, like, you could still be living in the yellow man's world. I mean, have some perspective. Yes, not going to be perfect.
But don't yell at that. He's not saying he feels that.
No, but I'm saying I'm surprising to me, like, they would come from the Korea I decided to come here. I wanted to be here. I'm on the New York Times now, and this is bullshit.
But when do you think? How much, like, you have to consider, like, she probably worked so hard to get to where she is,
You guys all work hard.
And see, that's another comment. That's a perfect example, because he just throws that out.
It must
there,
be
like,
true, considering how overrepresented you would be at Harvard. There's got to be some sliver of truth to it.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like a lot of times it's thrown to the side. And one point that I wanted to mention was, like, you brought up, like, she said counter-trolling, right? And even though she didn't explicitly reply to, like, a tweet, think about, like, how much shit has probably been thrown her way throughout her life. She's an Asian female, like, one of the most fetishized people on the in this country. How many fucked up comments do you think she's received?
Okay, but this is I had thought of this point, I'd forgotten it. So why are Asians are, I believe, are they do better than even Jews now. They're the highest earning group.
Yeah.
In terms of just income, okay.
Yeah. But also I read that there was twice the amount of Asians living under the poverty line. I just read that.
Yeah, those are Vietnamese, and there's actually even a distinction.
In the column, though, that I was reading, there, which I was blown away by.
They're the most successful. And actually, you know, the Hasidic community is very poor and on welfare, whatever, so I don't know. But, so I'm not clear why it is, other than they look different, that they are able to position themselves any different than Jews are able to position themselves in terms of oppression, objective bigotry, whatever it is. Yet, if a
Jews are white.
Well, that's what I just said. Yeah, If a Jew were to counter troll and say these things.
If a Jew were to say, non-Jews must go.
He would not get away with it.
Right.
I think you're correct.
And he's not situated any worse in this country than Asians, and not in any drastic way anyway. I mean, they've been here longer. They've risen to... But I think that's just mostly time. I imagine 30, 40 years from now, you're going to see Asians
I would say
at
this,
the top law firms and everything.
In terms of counter-trolling, there's no, I don't think, I can say with a fair degree of confidence that nobody is trolled worse than Jews. The hatred toward Jews, it seems to me, is far greater than
they
the hatred
really
toward
hate
Asians.
The Jews. They don't hate the Asians.
They don't hate the Asians.
They make fun of them.
They make fun of the Asians. You got goofy voices.
Whatever. I don't know. You know what's funny?
But Jews are considered evil and manipulative and almost supernatural in their evil. Jews are accused of fabricating the Holocaust.
Well, are you,
for
are
example?
You, yeah. Are you?
We are. you know. Good.
Are you trolling us?
You know good and well.
That's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me.
Hilarious. I mean, is there anyone else Jewish around? It's like two Jews.
Yes, Tim is half Jewish.
Yeah, okay, right. Yeah. But I date Jewish
exclusively.
Right, let's hear the Asian perspective. Yeah. If we might.
I mean, I think like you know, I think like Asians are made fun of, but it. The discrimination definitely has like real world applications, and in terms of like, there's definitely like a glass ceiling for Asians, and like, so I used to be a management consultant, and like when I would work,
where'd you work?
I worked at a McKinsey & Company.
Oh no shit! Okay,
yeah,
I interviewed with them.
Oh word!
Ago, I didn't get it.
Suck. You're Jewish.
Go on. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
See,
McKinsey's a WASPy, I guess. Anyway.
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
Irish
it's,
McKinsey.
I don't even know, but yeah, they would always tell me that I was too quiet, and they would tell me that my strength was analytics. I never did any numbers. Yeah. I never did any numbers. I just didn't do.
It sounds like the same shit that would come out of a Harvard interview, right? Oh yeah, he's too quiet, doesn't have personal. I mean, it's
Yeah, it's just like it was completely absurd.
You know what's funny? Is, I grew
and my
up
white, in... my white friends at the firm who like you know I worked on projects on. Instead of saying like they weren't quiet, it'd be like oh you know not as engaged or. You know, there's a different wording, and that's it's big.
Don't you feel like the last 2 years of the pile on of all of this stuff, racism is getting brought to the forefront for the first time in a really long in a way that it hasn't been for a while, right?
Yeah.
Everything was still kind of under the rug. Oh, things are getting better. Things are getting better. I truly believe Donald Trump being elected, the way the election went down, the way I truly believe that this administration is a huge reason and a huge part why everybody is just, you know, and sometimes it's way too much on each side, but I really believe that. I think that
it's
that's
become like sporting
and
events.
And here's
Tim,
a perfect example.
What did Tim say about it?
And,
go ahead, finish.
No, and here's a perfect example of that. You know, it's kind of going to what you said where the far left is almost being hypocritical of what they're against. Like, for example, I learned about they want Donald Trump's Hollywood Walk of Fame. They want that out. Right, they want that out because of everything that's going on.
Out.
But it's next to Kevin Spacey, who fucking you know is jerking off a 14-year-old boy, and it's you know it's there, and nobody's saying like, where's the logical person going? Okay, cool. We want to clean things up because listen, if you go down Hollywood Boulevard and you take every scumbag out, it's going to be a fucking ripped up street with you know with a couple of people in it.
Charlie Chaplin had young girls.
Yeah,
that's
what I mean. So it's like Bill Cosby's there. The guy's a fucking guy's
is his
raping
star still
people
there?
For yeah. Bill Cosby's star still there. He's been raping people for 40 fucking years. So everyone's like, rip Trump out. Now, it just seems to me that it's like this administration, for better or for worse, ultimately is why everything is coming to the forefront more. That's I think. Listen, if you look at when it started, when all the marches started, when all way more protests than any other president, it all started with Donald Trump. Go back.
Tim?
No, I agree with you. I think, look, like if you're
see, and he speaks 20 languages, and he agrees with me.
There you go. High five.
I mean, but that's
well, hold on. Wait, what I would say to that is that look, when
you agree
with
him,
well,
you're gonna,
no, but I don't.
Can you just say it in Chinese?
Yeah,
a little bit, just a little bit.
He's forgotten. I think he's let it go.
Okay, go ahead. Whatever you want.
What I would say is that look, like right when you start going down the rabbit hole of moral absolutism, like everyone in one way or another is fucked up, right? Which is the same debate we're seeing on like a national stage right now with the arguments over Confederate statues or like you know where does that you know if we can all agree, well, the Confederacy was terrible, but how does that apply to like let's say Calhoun College at Yale, right? Calhoun wasn't a Confederate, but he was a slave supporter. Oh, what about the founding fathers, right? They were all slave owners, they were all etc. You know, right. I think there's a certain point where like the historical judgment becomes subjective, but that shouldn't become an excuse for saying, well, because we can't like define a moral like absolutism, everything is okay. Right, I think we can all agree, like Jefferson Davis or these guys who headed the Confederacy should not be publicly celebrated. Mm-hmm. Right? Like there are plenty of people, like Bill Cosby probably should not have a tile on like and like there is like a gray zone, right? Uh-huh. But the fact that like, oh well, there's always gonna be that one extra guy who like is not universally hated, so it's more controversial to take a star off, doesn't justify doing away with the entire conversation.
Well,
that's what I mean.
I think that...
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does
smart
make
boy.
Sense. Well, yeah, he's very smart. But in practical sense, I
answered you.
I would leave everybody's star. Because in all these things, as soon as you take the first star off,
yep.
Now everybody...
Is that true?
Yes, it's true.
Is that true, Noam?
Yes. Once you take the first star off, people will now... And it'll start accelerating. What's the next star? This is what happened with anything like that. I remember when Bill O'Reilly first got the thing for... I'm not defending or not, but I'm saying when she first got that lawsuit against Bill O'Reilly, I said to Dan, it's blood in the water. You're going to see it's gonna, a lot
Wait,
of this.
Wait, no, hold on,
now.
Hold on, hold on. The precedent you're establishing there is that because not every single member of society can agree on the same thing, then everything should 100% be permissible, which we don't even see, for example,
because,
in speech laws.
No, I'm saying as an adult, I'm saying, like, you know what? I can handle the fact that some of these guys who had stars turned out to be perverts. I don't need to fucking.
Okay, well, I don't give a fuck about the stars, right? But you're talking about obviously.
Hole.
No, but hold on. You're using the stars as a metaphor for American society writ large, right? And about which.
Can you use small words?
Like, no, but like which politicians we choose to embrace publicly, which narratives we choose to embrace. These are actually very big questions, which involve people who've done a lot worse than.
No, I agree with
day
you about
rape,
Jefferson Davis,
right?
And the Confederacy. I said, yeah.
Right,
that's
no, but the point I'm saying, though, yeah. is that, like, is like just because not everyone can say universally that, like, you know, oh, I agree that Bill Cosby's star should be taken off. Oh, I don't agree, etc. Then that doesn't necessarily lead to the fact that, like, everything needs to be accessible. We have that even with speech, right? There's a very large consensus that you should be able to say what you want, but there's still limitations on speech, right? There are hate speech laws.
Yeah,
there's right?
No, there are no hate speech laws.
What are you talking about? No. Well, like
that I know of.
Incitement, you can't yell fire in a theater legally.
That's not hate speech.
You can't. But you get the point that I'm saying. That there are kinds of speech, even if we all agree that, like, we should have the widest spectrum of speech possible, it does not mean that every single utterance you can say in a public setting is legally or socially acceptable.
There's very, 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 at least until now, people on left and right all thought they should be very, very limited. I mean obviously,
sure.
I don't know what the argument, I mean, what the doctrine was called, but if you yell fire in a crowded theater,
right,
that's not expression of any kind, and that's the speech which is not expression.
Did he ever say that the theater
shouldn't
be on fire?
Anything to incite riots is illegal.
But any time where you start expressing your opinion, I think let him just say.
Well, hold on.
You lead
a mob together and you say, I think we should go kill that black guy. That's an expression of opinion, and it is technically illegal in the sense that you're inciting a crowd and you can be prosecuted.
Incitement is very, very difficult
to
prove.
It's an expression of an opinion.
Yeah, incitement is very, very difficult to prove. I don't remember what the thing at some.
Look,
these,
you know this better than I do.
No,
right?
I don't remember. I studied for 30 years. But there are some of these things are very difficult to tease out. But if you may not be able to say, let's go kill that black guy, but you are able to say anything else you want about the black guy. I don't think you can ask people to go hurt him, but you are allowed to say whatever you want about Donald Trump, whatever you fucking want.
So
if you say something that sounds like you want violence, if the court says, well, no, a reasonable person would have understood he's speaking metaphorically, and nobody really, you're allowed to say that probably even about the president. And there are special laws about the president.
Right.
So, and that's as it should be. The country, listen, we've done very well as a country with all these free speech laws.
Yeah.
I can't believe we're revisiting it now.
There was a giant record out by a rapper in, I think, 92, a guy named Paris from Oakland, and he had a record that was called Bush Killer. And
is that Tupac? I think it
was Tupac. No, his name was Paris.
Okay.
And the record was called Bush Killer, and it was a photo of him hiding behind a hedge looking at the White House. No problem, came out. Of course, it got banned later, but it came out, and you know, it wiped his career out, but you could pretty much say whatever you want, you know, on an artistic form. Oh, that was an art, you know, you can do a movie, you can do a record, whatever, you know.
I think what he was saying, though, was like, what's socially acceptable, people will know that something's not rational, like, it's not, doesn't make any sense to say that it's gonna,
it's come down to the dumb sports mentality almost of, like, I'm a Raiders fan, which would be like, say, the right, and then the left would be like, I like 49ers. It's all this dumb sports analogy now of, like, fuck them, and it's not the planet. Like, hey, let's make the planet better. It's like, it's us. Fuck us, everyone else, which is mind-boggling to me.
I had said to Tim the other night what I thought was actually the most profound original thought I'd ever had. Which was honored. Which was that I thought physiologically that the brain, like, every emotion, I mean, unless you believe in a soul or whatever it is, the brain is an organ, and every emotion, everything that you can feel, whether it's guilt or indignation, outrage, whatever it is, these are all in the blueprints of our brain. And they're probably each one there for some evolutionary reason that they help us. Guilt is an obvious one. Like, how do you keep a society together without guilt? Right. Sociopaths have no guilt. But and I felt that, and if we don't find something to tickle that emotion, we find something. So I think outrage, it's like we just have to find something to be outraged at, and we react to it without. Very difficult to keep perspective on how serious the outrage is, so that the reaction to Jim Crow and black people being hosed becomes the same physiological reaction as the reaction to somebody using the wrong pronoun. And I'm not minimizing pronouns. I try to use the right pronoun, but it's not this, an autistic guy who doesn't feel any emotion would be able to tell, you know, this is obviously much worse than that, just in an objective way. So sure enough, I sent this to a NYU psychology professor, and he sent us back. You saw the study?
Yeah, he sent back.
It's true. And it was just in June, which is the amazing thing, which is that the brain will find new examples of something
right.
if the real examples are not there anymore. I think that's what all this is. Like, we're living in this, in a really, really, what ought to be a really, really objectively good time,
right.
yet we're reacting to everything around us as if this is 1955.
But isn't that progress? Isn't that progress, though?
Right. I mean, hold on. I mean, in sociology, there's something called Maslow's hierarchy of needs, where basically—
Let the record show Tim just made a triangle with his hands.
you look at like, what a human being or an organism, like, needs to survive. The first tranche might be just, like, very basic, you know, food and water, sexual drive, sleep, etc. And then afterwards there's something
that covers it. Yeah.
Yeah, but afterwards there's emotional fulfillment, or there's, like, moral fulfillment, etc. So maybe the point is that, in like, we're moving beyond general material conditions of survival, which we've been past for 200 years or whatever in most societies, and now people are moving on towards different things that they need to be concerned about fulfilling. It doesn't necessarily invalidate that, right? I mean,
true.
I think sure.
It's like human happiness, like human outrage, seems to adjust such that we're always at roughly the same level, maybe is, you know what I'm saying? Like, if somebody gets a struggling actor becomes a movie star, and he's happy for a while until he decides that being a movie star is not enough, right. and he wants more movies more money.
More fame.
And so his level of happiness ultimately seeks some sort of, you know, level.
Or
constant
that,
level, and I mean, maybe what you're saying is that human outrage functions similarly.
The analogy I always give, I'm sorry, is the microscope. You look at something in a microscope or just the naked eye, and you clean it up, whatever. Now it doesn't look ugly. Then you double the magnification. Oh my God! And then finally you get up to 400 times magnification, and it's still as ugly as ever. But somebody has to remind you. No, yes. But you're at 400 magnification. And we're kind of looking at some social problems now at 400 magnification. We've forgotten what it actually was to have a society where the problems looked that ugly at zero magnification.
Sure.
Right.
Right.
And that's what I think we have trouble keeping in perspective.
Don't they say, too, that, like, the emotion of anger and outrage stems from fear? Like, when you're afraid of something, like, when you get angry, I think, isn't that like a scientific thing? Like, when you get angry.
It's a question of facts. Ask Tim. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. It's so funny. I'm just looking to that.
He's looking at him like he's Google.
When you're really upset about something,
right.
It's actually when you go all the way down and you try to figure out why, it's because you're afraid. So you see a group of people that don't look like you, you're older. What is that? It's because you're afraid of them. And when you're, and then you lash out. It's fear.
Okay, we got 7 minutes. I want you guys to have some fun with Tim and his languages. Go ahead.
Oh yeah,
Tim, he's not doing that anymore. Really?
Come on,
Tim. Okay.
Remember John Stewart on the Crossfire? I'm not your trained monkey.
I wanted to ask him a question though, because I did watch the video.
I mean, didn't you abandon your language studies some time back, more or less?
What made you get into it?
That you don't pursue that anymore as intensively.
Getting asked.
Yeah, well, I made friends in college, so it was just kind of...
He made friends.
Let Dean get his question in. Go ahead.
I wanted to ask you a question I've been wanting to learn Spanish. Every year I go, I'm going to quit sugar and learn Spanish. Right. I finally quit sugar a couple of years ago. I still don't know Spanish, but obviously you're a pretty smart dude. How long did it take you to learn these languages?
Can I answer on Tim's behalf?
Yeah, I think Dan's got me.
Okay.
Well, first of all, you have to define learn a language.
Mm.
One can speak a language
a true
like a cab driver.
I get it.
Might speak English.
It.
You know, yeah. I go left. You enough motherfucking shit for the son of shit. I fuck your mother.
Yeah, it's not a shit level, I think, takes a few weeks.
And so he speaks English, but he doesn't speak English like William F. Buckley Jr.
I get it.
I don't think anyone speaks English like William F. Buckley Jr.
So, you know, what does it mean to speak,
Mexico. Yeah.
to speak a language?
Right. And well, he spoke French pretty damn well. The other ones, he could do a couple lines. I get it. But I can't even do, I can do a bunch of lines in Spanish. But, man, that was, you know, impressive. And definitely takes, probably you didn't have anything else to do, right?
Clearly not.
He's so good at it. Literally, neurologists have studied his brain to see the structures. We had, years ago, we had him, and we ordered some Chinese food, and delivery guy came, and Tim and he had a whole conversation.
Oh, I'll tell you a great story. I used to work for the Stones, and that we were in Japan, and we had this guy that looked like Tom Arnold, exact, and he was our interpreter. And I go, that guy's our interpreter? And he goes, yeah. So we're in this store, and I'm like, hey, how much for this right here? And the guy's talking to the other guy, right? And then the interpreter looks at me and goes, are they ripping you off right here? And I go, what? And he goes, yeah. And so he hits him with some Japanese, and they were like, like they were fucking floored, man, that this white Tom Arnold guy was just riddling them with amazing Japanese. It was great.
Have you gotten laid because of this? Like,
that's a change.
See,
I
that's
say,
my
like,
question.
On 5 years ago when I came on with the fucking, you know, glasses. Like,
that's something I want to know.
Like, shaven version, just like, now. Oh, I really love cultures and languages. No,
and
I mean, right, since then.
Now he just likes smashing pussy.
Can you say that in that, in French, smashing pussy?
That one I can't.
What are your best languages now?
Yeah.
I mostly use Persian for like research and stuff.
Oh, wow. Really?
And I dated a Turkish girl basically for last year, just broke up.
I would say smashing pussy would probably be Defoncer les chattes.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Probably be the best.
You did a set in Montreal, French, didn't you?
You know, translation I can think of. I have done in Montreal and Paris.
Yeah, I saw a clip of it. It was really impressive.
How did you speak Chinese?
What dialect? Not well.
Not even
not
a little
well.
Bit?
No, I speak a little
what is it?
Mandarin?
What is you speak Mandarin?
Ni hao ma.
Did a lot in high school.
Come on, let's a little bit. Just a little
Come
bit.
On.
Just try it. Let's just see what happens.
Ni hao ma.
Well, 很好,谢谢. 怎么样?
我很好. 有很多白人在这里.
是的. He said there's a lot of white people right here.
What is the main... when an Asian... I did want to discuss... I don't know how much time we have,
but
Sarah Jeong, one of the defenses was she didn't mean all white people, she meant the power structure. But one of her tweets said that white people smell like wet dog. Now, it'd be hard to make
a compliment
case.
In her
it would
culture.
Be hard to make a case that she meant.
That's good.
That's
funny.
That's one of those jokes in Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah.
that may be.
It's funny, though. I'm down.
It would be hard to make a case that she meant only the white establishment smells like wet dog. You know, that sort of...
only the higher powers smell like wet dog.
The question I
smelled like wet dog earlier today walking
this,
here.
Is this a stereotype in the Asian culture that white people smell like wet dog?
I don't know. I never heard that from, like, my parents or my family, so I don't...
I never knew Asian hated people until I watched Do the Right Thing, Spike Lee, which is all the way back
that's
then.
A good movie.
But I'm just saying, you know, I had no idea of the race tensions, and I grew up in San Francisco Bay Area, and it was like massive Asians and a lot of you know, different races, and I had no idea. And then I watched that movie, and I'm like, when they get to the racial part on each person, you know, D motherfucker, D, the battery part and all that.
Well, at that time, first of all, my Rosalind, my old girlfriend, she's from black from the south, and she said, my mom always used to say when white people get wet, they smell like dog. So I think that's a general
consensus.
But if in fact white people do smell like dog, then is truth an absolute defense to racism?
Yes, it is. Okay. But Do the Right Thing came out at the time. I don't know if you know about it. There was a Korean boycott in New York.
I remember because they owned all the corner stores and they wouldn't let black people in, right, without watching them for stealing and stuff.
And I don't know if Sharpton was directly involved in it, but him, his Confederates anyway, you know, were carrying signs like "Don't buy from people who don't look like you" and whatever it is. So that was a really that was a time when there really was open bigotry against Asians in New York, but it didn't come from the white community. Actually, as a matter of fact, the white community was outraged by it.
Right,
it came from the black community at the time, and you know she probably would just put her head in the sand about something like that.
I thought that was one of the greatest films ever made.
Do the right thing. I didn't think it was a tremendous film. It's all right.
Are you kidding me?
I have to rewatch it, but I remember not being blown away or anything close to blown away. I remember thinking, first of all, this is silly. Why? He made it sound like the Italians were doing something wrong by not having black people on the wall of their Italian pizzeria.
Well, they were in a black neighborhood.
Well, it's their pizzeria.
But it got down into black owned and all that stuff, which is, you know, when there was no black owners.
Well, that's not the fault of the Italian.
I get it, but I mean, you know, you want to celebrate the neighborhood if you're in a neighborhood. You know what I'm saying?
Well, but pizza's an Italian dish.
Okay, because the genius of that movie was that afterwards, it was the most subtle thing Spike Lee had done, because afterwards, people from each side could look at that movie and really argue about it. Like, see, he was aware of the argument that you're making now. That was part of what made the movie interesting.
Yep.
So I think it really was quite.
It's the same thing when
his best movie was Malcolm X, as far as I'm concerned.
No, the same thing he did when he did Get on the Bus, which was the one about the Million Man March, and he turned it around on all of black people that always had like, oh, they're taking the jobs, and then he would just break that down. Nah, they're not. And then each guy on the bus, he would break down what they would say and how they were wrong. So he looks at all different areas.
Well, what I learned recently, apropos of Italian restaurants in black neighborhoods, I learned that the black hair care retail market is dominated by Asians. This I did not know.
No idea.
What the fuck?
Now that's to me, certainly anyone has a right to sell
black hair care. And it's hair from Indians, from India.
Okay, but it's marketed to black people. And to me, certainly anybody has a right to sell black hair care products.
I wish we had
somebody black here.
Koreans?
Maybe it's Koreans.
Yeah, Koreans are very into beauty. So if they sell beauty products to all different types of people, that doesn't surprise me. They're super into
We have to wrap it up.
Okay. Yeah.
Very quickly, I may or may not be, one of the reasons I may or may not be writing an op-ed or submitting an op-ed, and one of the things in the op-ed is to be whether or not, if Louis wants to come back and perform at the Cellar, whether A, I should let him, and B, whether I'll survive it. Quickly, give me your thoughts on it, and then we got to wrap it up.
Yeah, I definitely think he should be able to come back. And
one sentence, why?
Great comic, and I didn't think it was so bad that it deserves a lifetime ban on his career.
Whoa, brave man.
You know, to me, there's a significant difference between being a creep and being a predator. I do not think I don't think he's a predator at all. He didn't assault anybody. No real crime was committed. I mean, he did some creepy shit. I think he's loved enough and good enough at his art where he deserves to come back. And I think you would 1,000% survive it.
Tim,
abstain.
Oh my God.
Damn. I mean, would you survive it? That's like asking, would I survive a blowjob by three Victoria's Secret models? Yeah, I think you'd survive the incredible publicity.
Yeah.
You would thrive. It would be great for comedy, great for the salary, and it would be, and I'm sure it would be a mea culpa and healing. Whatever he said up there, he's not going to go up there and say, ah, fuck these bitches. He's going to go up there and do a mea culpa, and it's going to be healing, and I think it's going to be fascinating when he does come back, and absolutely. You should have him on, and it'll help.
All right.
Your business.
Tim, you don't want to go on a limb on this. I'm not going to force you, but the reason I'm interested, because you're not a comedian, I'm just wondering, as a member of the public, would you feel why did they let him go back on? Or do you feel that these people should be banished forever, or you have no thoughts on it?
I don't know anything.
Can you ask him in Chinese? All right, that's it, everybody. Good night. Thank you very much.